Chapter 1. As he always did when he wasn't hungover, O'Keefe forced himself into his gym shorts, t-shirt, socks, and tennis shoes, and moved through the dark apartment toward his exercise room, believing that this was yet another decision, however small and seemingly insignificant, in favor of life and against death, like the times in Vietnam when he had fought off sleep on guard duty. The little men in the black pajamas, the little men who never slept, were just waiting for you to doze off so they could creep into your hole and quietly, and ever so gently, cut your throat. The apartment occupied the entire bottom floor of an old Victorian house in a regentrifying neighborhood. He could sense, though he could not see, Kelly sleeping on the fold-out couch in the living room. She was spending the weekend with him. She under his care, he under hers. "The child will save you," he thought. The digital dial of the clock sitting on the fireplace mantel read 5:12 a.m., 10:04:86. He passed through the living room and into the spare bedroom that he had converted into an exercise room and small home office. He flipped on the light and turned on the TV. The all-news channel headlined a statement from President Reagan concerning the shooting down of a plane over Nicaragua loaded with supplies for the rebel Contras. The Nicaraguan government claimed that the CIA had sponsored the plane. The U.S. ambassador and CIA denied the charge. In Palm Beach, Florida, the FBI had accomplished the largest drug bust in U.S. history, seizing 4,620 pounds of cocaine, worth $41 million. His exercise program was simple and took exactly 1 hour. Stretching exercises, sit-ups, side straddle hops, jumping rope, 30 minutes on the exercise bike or treadmill, squat thrusts, leg lifts, push-ups. He had done these exercises almost every morning for many years now, but he still disliked every second of this wrenching hour. He had disliked the exercises ever since he had first done them at the age of 10, under the mock savage goading of his grade school football coaches. He had liked them even less, again many years later, in the Marine Corps, as he strained beneath the razor eyes of the little fascist thug in the Smokey the Bear hat, who'd like to scream at you and kick you in the side as you struggle to complete that last fingertip push-up. After boot camp, he had vowed never again to do exercises. For years afterward, he had kept that vow. But those years had been lost years. However much he hated these exercises, however stupid and dull this hour proved always to be, he knew he needed it the same way he needed food or sleep, needed it to survive. This morning's exercise routine was a critical link in his slender lifeline to reality, like the cord that attached the astronaut walking in space to his ship. If that lifeline ever snapped again, as it had done in those lost, drug-fogged years, he might drift for the rest of his days, trapped in the void, squandering the only life he would ever be privileged to live. Yet he still wanted sometimes to reach out and sever the line, cut the cord. That void, that limbo of mind and soul, still attracted him, pulled at him like the flame pulls at the moth. He was doing his last few push-ups when Kelly came looking for him. She stood in the doorway, flinching as she watched him grunting in pain, arms quivering, chest heaving. The last one was too much for him. He could not quite complete it before he collapsed face down on the floor, panting and wanting to throw up.